Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As Gilcrease Museum prepares for its Vision-funded $65 million renovation and expansion of the facility, the museum leadership has taken this opportunity to examine the complete collection of the museum and develop a new interpretive plan for it, deciding what stories the collection can tell to visitors. And the choices are broad. Gilcrease is a major art museum with important collections of 19th century American art, Western art, and American Indian art, a history museum with a major repository of historic documents, and an anthropological and ethnographic institute with a multitude of objects from ancient cultures and others from cultures that survive and thrive today. So what stories do you tell? The answer seems to be a complementary one that utilizes all of these objects to tell a huge story, the North American story, with its successes, tragedies, and conflicts told from many points of view. The museum was assisted in their task by Gallagher & Associates, an internationally recognized museum planning firm that's worked on facilities ranging from Mount Vernon in Virginia to the National World War II Museum to the Grammy Museum and our own Woody Guthrie Center. Susan Neal is the executive director of Gilcrease Museum, and she joins us today to talk about this new interpretive plan, which was released at the beginning of this week. Susan Neal, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rich.
Nearly all museums have far more collected material than they can ever put on display, and perhaps some of that's for a good reason, because when you go down to the vaults, you say, oh, I don't understand why you don't see this particular piece. And Gilcrease is no exception. You have millions of pieces, but why was it important to first think about how the museum interprets its collections prior to doing an expansion to show more of what you have?
Sure. Well, one of the long-standing requests that we get from visitors, whether they're local or from Germany, from overseas somewhere, they will know about the Gilcrease collection, and they will come and they will want to see all of the Remingtons or all the Russells or all of the Morans or things that the collection is known for. But when you have a limited space, not all of that is going to be available. So you're constantly trying to meet that demand while still showing a local audience something new. But since Thomas Gilcrease amassed the largest collection of Americana by a single individual, there's no way that we can do that, just as you said. So how we go about finding that balance is important to the Tulsa community, but it's also important to our visitors from all over the world who do know what is here and who have who highly value the opportunity to see it. So one of the things that we did when we were promoting and talking to the city of Tulsa and the citizens of Tulsa about expansion, our renovation, and making more room, was that they want to see more of the Gilcrease collection, and we only have about 4% of the collection available for viewing at any one time. And as you said, many museums can't exhibit their entire collection, but that's a thimble of what we could full of what we could be showing. So, and there is a demand for seeing and showcasing this valuable collection.
You've done this reimagination and reinterpreting what you have.
Right.
Have you learned anything about the museum during this planning process of what exactly Gilcrease is and what it possesses?
Absolutely. The people who have worked at Gilcrease for many years learned a lot about what is there. This has been an extraordinary process. We had help initially from Dr. James Ronda, who is a former professor at the University of Tulsa, who really helped us, guide us through the early days of an interpretive plan. And when we needed to take it to the next step, we engaged Gallagher & Associates. Both of those experiences have been so helpful. For myself, I had no idea that the collection spans 12,000 plus years of history. I had no idea that the collection ranged, from the standpoint of geography, from Panama to the Arctic, so it's really North America broadly defined, which gives you an opportunity to tell not only the story of America, but the story of the Americas. It's what we think people are used to seeing from Gilcrease that we need to make sure that we can incorporate that, but we need to really broaden it and also tell those stories from many different perspectives. And I learned that we have that opportunity.
So you have the collection in place to tell it, the story from a perspective of women, from African Americans, from Latino Americans, from people in Canada, from people in Mexico,
absolutely,
the Caribbean.
Absolutely. That is how broadly Thomas Gilchrist collected. We can show one of the first letters from the New World, which is so important in that Diego Columbus was writing to his sponsors in Spain, explaining, and he's Christopher Columbus's son, he was explaining that there would be a labor problem, that Indians had souls, Native Americans, the indigenous peoples that were here could be saved, and they had a soul. And so we couldn't really enslave them and force them to provide the labor as anticipated. And it was the first letter that introduces the idea of slavery from Africa into the Caribbean and suggests that. Such a pivotal and disturbing, but such an important letter in all of our history. And we then have the signed Emancipation Proclamation. So yes, we can certainly speak to our own African-American population, but we can also speak to an Hispanic population, Latino population, from the standpoint of having at least 20 Hispanic artists in our collection. It includes the founding documents. It includes papers that are important to many people throughout North America in its archive collection. And it has some of the finest art that can tell the story of westward expansion. And that's probably what we are known for, is that westward expansion and stories of the West. But what I learned, and what the staff, Gilchrist has never had an interpretive plan before, is really doing a deep dive on the archive, really doing a deep dive on the art collection. Same thing with the anthropological artifacts. And in doing so, we've learned so much, and it will be a fascinating story. One of the things that Patrick Gallagher said, and he's our consultant who led us through our second phase of the interpretive plan, he made it clear that he was prepared for us to be, as most museums, either you're an art museum or you're a history museum. So he was, are you an art museum with a capital A and a history museum with a little h, or vice versa? And after working with us for some time, he said, I get it, because we wouldn't let ourselves be defined that way as one or the other. And he, after working with us for a few months, said, you are absolutely right.
That makes the job doubly difficult, because you're an amalgam museum. You're not just an art museum, although many people will come only wanting to see the art. Others will want to come only to see the history. But you're going to have to tell all those stories.
That is the challenge. It is also an opportunity for Tulsa to have a museum that is uniquely positioned to tell those stories, unlike any other museum. And that, according to someone who has been doing interpretive planning for museums around the world. So we're very excited about this.
Yes, it is a great opportunity. And at the same time, oftentimes when you're telling stories of history, telling stories of ancient stories of migration and archaeological materials, it's important that you tell it in a way that speaks to a generation that is used to looking at screens and looking at technology and the attention span that's not going to look at a lot of text on the walls. So you have to tell the story in new, interesting ways. This is another challenge.
You are absolutely right. We have not had the capacity to speak to screenagers ever. We have recently, with the help of the Kravis family, been able to incorporate some technology in the Kravis Discovery Center. And the excitement that we see in children's faces when they go into the Kravis Discovery Center and see a wall full of iPads that they can go and collect and begin to interact with some of our most ancient artifacts, to see how they can relate and begin to find their own way and navigate that. It's totally different than having them just pull out a drawer and take a look at it. So we've already begun to introduce some technology, but we have a long way to go. And you're right, being able to introduce history and art and a lot of really important stories will require a very robust system and thoughtful approach in using technology.
I know the Kravis Discovery Center, the way it was re-envisioned, it was sort of an experiment to see how both young people and not so young people would take to it. Now, my observation is that young people take to it great. It's the older audience that goes, what do I do with this iPad?
Oh, you are right. We had to train ourselves and our volunteers thinking that we would be the people that would then teach the students. We have trained ourselves, but the students come in ready. They know. The kids know.
Yeah. So my larger question was, has that been a success? Has this pointed the way forward for
it
how
has.
You use technology?
It has. I'm so glad we had that opportunity, and I'm grateful to the Kravis Foundation for having given us that opportunity to pilot that experience. It has really shown us how to evaluate what we have offered and then how to even improve upon it going forward so that it can not only speak to the kids but to all ages. So it's been a really good project for us.
My guest today is Susan Neal, the executive director of Gilcrease Museum. The museum recently completed a new interpretive plan. It's actually the first interpretive plan that Gilcrease has ever had as they prepare for a $65 million city investment in the expansion and renovation of the museum. But I know at least there's another $10 million
yes.
and perhaps more money down the road privately raised to help fund this and support and sustain the expansion. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the things that becomes obvious when you look at the reinterpretive plan is that how you tell the story is going to be very much an immersive situation where I think the plan refers to it as complementary history and art interpretation. And basically, instead of putting your art in one place, your history objects in another place, your ethnographic materials in another place, and archaeological materials mm-hmm. in another place, it's all going to be together. And you're going to hopefully tell a coherent story through all of these objects.
That was a guiding principle from the beginning of this exercise, knowing that we wanted to disaggregate the collection. When it's kept in silos, it doesn't speak with as much resonance or value to its audience. And when we put them together, it's so much better a story and much more comprehensive, and it ends up bringing in the many voices that need to be heard.
And I will just say one of the criticisms I have of the museum is when it has been siloed, you know, there are incredible Native American art collections, but they're down this one hall
right.
that I think a lot of visitors never get down there. I assume that's the idea is to move these, you know, yeah. right next door.
You know, Rich, you've hit on a very important part of this. Not only did we start with the idea that we wanted to disaggregate and really bring the entire collection to life for educational and purposes as well as just pure enjoyment, we realized that we don't have a building that accommodates visitors well.
There are a lot of places to get lost and a lot of places that you'll never find.
Exactly. The last time the building was renovated was well over 30 years ago the mid-80s. And people had a different expectation of what a destination, an entertainment destination venue should look like, what they could expect in terms of technology, what they could expect in terms of visitor flow, and how they're a part of it. Now things have changed so dramatically, and yet as a city-owned institution, that hasn't been able to be accommodated. Thanks to the citizens of Tulsa and the AR and Mary Louise Tandy Foundation, we are beginning to figure out how we can finally make a great visitor experience by using not only all of the collection, but creating a navigable system. First, the narration, then a system that can support it in terms of how the visitor can navigate it. I think everybody is going to see a totally different Gilcrease. Museums transform people's lives if they're done well. We first need to transform Gilcrease, and I think we will more than deliver.
So the renovation will be probably far more extensive as much as expansion, because you're talking about probably knocking down a lot of walls. So there is, I don't know if it'll be a central pathway, but it will be a continuous sort of
The visitor
journey.
Will not have to scratch their head as they go from exhibit to exhibit about how they get there, either by way of story or by signage or just by interest, it will be evident. So again, something we currently do not have. But that's, again, just something that has changed a lot in the last 40 years or so. So we just, it really needs that.
Now, the museum collection will be organized and focused around three core ideas. What are those core ideas?
You raised the fact that it's a challenge because it's so vast and it has history and documents and ethnographic material and art. So how do you do that? We really focused with one core idea, one overarching idea will be our changing America. And underneath that are three sub-ideas or sub-themes, and it's this American landscape, identities and communities, and that can be talking about communities as small as the neighborhood we're in or the community of big stories of all of North America. And then encounters and interaction, how people met one another throughout history, what happened, what led us to today. And that's where we, in each of these three themes, it's our job to take a collection that speaks to so much history and make it, bring it to life and make it relevant to the ideas and the challenges and same issues that we work with. We're, you know, still working our way through today.
I gathered that our changing America, a lot of the Gilcrease collection sort of spans through the 19th century, mm-hmm. and then it shifts to more of Western art in the 20th century.
Right.
So it really doesn't tell a full story of the 20th century, but you're trying to bring it up into the 21st century.
We are. Through talking with a colleague at the University of Tulsa, I heard them explain to me why they had such a great vacation going back to St. Louis and enjoying their hometown. I said, well, good, you really got to see your family, etc. They said, well, yes, but what was really enjoyable were the museums. And since I now am the director of a museum, I thought, well, I need to know what was so enjoyable. What was, because this person was effusive about this. And she stopped and thought a moment, and she said, my family and I could see ourselves on the walls. And it was relevant to what discussions we have with our family today. And so it all made sense to me. That was a bit of an epiphany and a really helpful moment, because that's what people need to be able to do, is walk into a museum. Yes, we're all going to have a different expectation, whether you're a teacher with a classroom of young children, or whether you're a visitor from abroad, or whether you're a Tulsan who just loves to come back to Gilcrease. You're going to have different expectations of what you will learn and what you will see. First of all, it has to be enjoyable. It has to be fun, but you also have to be relevant. And it can't be a finger wag of any kind, being in anybody's face about how they interpret history. All our goal is to show history from and exhibit art and this important document archive in such a way that people can see that there are many views and portals to that history.
Is it possible to do that with the Gilcrease collection, because so much of it is referring back to the 17th, 18th, 19th century as opposed to today? I mean, I think that's perhaps one of the points your example was using, was the fact that they related to something that was happening now.
They related to something that was historical, I think, okay. in this particular museum in relating to jazz musicians throughout time and from all over, and the origins of jazz, but being able to understand that not only could they see people that they were like, they could understand, they really made a history of that come alive for them. So I think it's both of those things. The issues that were troubling our founding fathers, clearly we haven't gotten everything solved, and I think those conversations are still difficult. And, you know, we don't want people to be troubled when they are trying to come to an art and history museum. And yet we also think that people do look for understanding when they come to a museum, as well as just a pleasurable experience. But I think Gilcrease can uniquely help us have conversations that might be difficult elsewhere.
Now, the one aspect of the Kravis area of the museum is, of course, you're showing so many more ethnographic materials. And I guess that's going to be a part of this new plan, too, to go to open storage, where instead of a few objects that represent 1,000 or 10,000. It might be putting 500 objects out there with sliding doors in which people can...
That is certainly a goal.
Yeah.
When you have so much that is hidden away and a mystery, it's rather a shame. So having as much open storage as we can afford to have in this new reimagined Gilcrease, that is a very, very much a priority for us. One of the things that we felt like, well, actually two of the things that we know, and they were primary because I was involved with those discussions, we know we committed to the community that we would show more of the Gilcrease collection. That was something, again, that was important to this community. We also said that we would make sure that we could make room and provide space for a large traveling exhibit. Those were commitments made, and they will be delivered upon.
Hmm. That was my next question is, with this reexamination of what Gilcrease is and what Gilcrease can do, has that changed any of the plans? I know during the vision vote, there was, again, you mentioned the large exhibition space for traveling shows, space for more of the collection to be seen. But also there was a lot of eye candy architecturally with, you know, a new cafe up on a new level. And it was oriented towards downtown where you could see downtown Tulsa spectacularly from the museum. Has some of that changed because of the fact that you've gone through this process?
It has, to the extent, and again, the parts that we felt like were fundamental to the Gilcrease collection, what people were expecting, those are in the project going forward. The architectural eye candy, as you said, I think as soon as you put a concept on a piece of paper in order to get people excited about what could be, which is what was required of us at the time, they make a leap. Well, there you go.
That's what it's going to be.
That's what it's going to be. There. I'm glad I got to see that first. When indeed, no matter how often one says, these are concept drawings that we have put forward to try to convey that Gilcrease is due an upgrade. If you have a world-class collection, you need to have a world-class facility. These are some ideas that could the outside could capture or could present. So what we did, and you know, I think it's important. Tulsa's most valuable asset is the Gilcrease collection, billions of dollars worth of art and artifacts and documents. If we had said to an architect, here is the public $65 million, go forth and create an expansion, I'm sure we would have gotten a lot of wonderful eye candy, as you called it.
An amazing shell.
We would have gotten
But there's no nut in the...
But yes, exactly. And where that would have left us is with the wonderful eye candy without what would be happening to the exhibits and the visitor experience when as soon as they opened the door and came and would enter. So we decided to work from the inside out. The building itself will be transformed. It will look very different. But what will be most transformational is what we are going to do with this collection and how it will be represented on the, and we had to start on the inside for that. And we so want to improve the visitor experience. And those are just so hand in glove. We had to start there with the visitor and with the collection. And then we'll make sure the building looks as much of the eye candy that we can afford and still do justice to the collection and the patrons.
What is the timeline at this point now that you have a reinterpretation plan?
Right.
I suppose at this point, this is where you say, okay, we need to find an architect who understands this.
Right.
And proceed from there. What's the timeline for this expansion at this point? Do we have one?
Yes. When you asked... what have I learned? I've learned so many things about how this needs to work. And I'm so grateful that we've been given the time to be thoughtful, as well as been given the resources with the public dollars and now private dollars, and with the potential to inspire additional private dollars. But I'm really grateful for the time that we've been given. Tulsans can't do this again anytime that soon. So what I've learned is we need to be thoughtful about it. And again, having taken this time to do the interpretive plan now gives us time to give something to architects that will really inform how this should work, from how much space should be there for changing galleries, how much should be there for this large exhibit gallery, how much space should be for open storage, things that we know were must-haves to make this place rock. And we've done that. So the city just this past Thursday released the request for qualifications to the larger architectural community. And I think walkthroughs are scheduled for February 14th and February 28th here in Tulsa for architects from whether they come from international cities or across America or locally. Everyone will have those two opportunities to come and visit the Gilcrease, see it firsthand, and get their head around this project, what it currently looks like. But not only are they given the RFQ, which spells out a lot of these requirements and the city process, they're also fortunate, I think, to have the benefit of an interpretive plan that was meant to inform them as to how they can best deliver a great project for Tulsa.
So the request for qualifications has gone out.
Right.
Are we talking selecting an architect in the next year at this point?
Or? Yes, we are. The ideal time frame is to have an architect by July, in July. Design process after that, depending on all kinds of conditions, which we've all learned from other big projects in Tulsa, can be influenced by weather and what you find underground when you're doing renovations and so forth. So we've been generous and allowed for 2 years for design on paper, but you know that could take 14 months. And if we're lucky, it will. But we very much want to measure twice, cut once. And so allow the appropriate amount of time for the design. If we did use that all of 2 years, if we started in with the architect in July of this year, in 2019, if it really did take 2 years for design to be completed, and again, I do not think it quite will take all of that, but if we allowed for that, we'd be looking at mid-2021 for assuming that, well, you know, when you would begin construction. And again, on all of those extenuating circumstances that can come up, if we allow for 18 months to 2 years, we'd be looking at 2023 for completion.
Susan Neal is the executive director of Gilcrease Museum. The museum recently completed a new interpretive plan as they prepare for the $65 million Vision-funded expansion and renovation of the museum. If you'd like to learn more about the plan, visit gilcrease.org/about/vision. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.